We're taking this with a pinch of salt.
Dear colleagues, of course, we'll take it with a little pinch of salt. Welcome to our new podcast on the new treatments in nephrology. I'm George Kosmadakis, your today's host of a most exciting episode. In the pitch of salt, we are looking for common sense answers to difficult, clinically relevant questions. We firmly believe that the so-called simple questions may be the most important ones and are too rarely asked and answered. In that sense, a large number of goodies, aka new drugs, are in offer lately, and others are going to appear shortly. This may be a logical source of confusion and misunderstanding, especially when all these goodies are starting combining themselves. So we are very honored and lucky to host Professor Catherine Tuttle, Executive Director for Research, Providence Inland Northwest Care, University of Washington, USA. Her CV is unbelievable. And I just picked up that she's actually a regional co-principal investigator at the Institute of Translational Health Sciences and an ASN Continuous Professional Development Committee member. Catherine, thank you so much for having accepted our invitation.
Well, thank you. It's truly a pleasure to join you. It's such an exciting time in our field.
Exactly. Well, you have worked with various of these new drugs and have passed the transition from the research to the clinical practice. And for those of us who have been around for long, it is sometimes difficult to assimilate the rapidity of the evolutions lately. And after having barely absorbed the classic indications for the SGLT2 inhibitors, the next obvious question, and the first one for tonight, is: apart from the known nephroprotective, antiproteinuric, and cardioprotective effects, can you identify any other pleiotropic effects of the SGLT2 inhibitors, diuretic, antihypertensive, antifibrotic?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. What we do know about the SGLT2 inhibitors is that the receptor only resides on the proximal tubule. So the effects of SGLT2 inhibitors that are pleiotropic are actually non-receptor mediated effects. And many of those are being identified, particularly in the kidney, heart, and vasculature. So for example, an SGLT2 inhibitor combined a signal transduction pathway called mTORC that not only lowers glycolysis or produces cell starvation, which we think is an important mechanism of both kidney and heart protection, but also reduces inflammation. So we think a major way that these drugs reduce inflammation is a non-receptor mediated inhibition of the mTORC signal. And it's been identified not only in the proximal tubule epithelial cell, but in podocytes, for example, mesangial cells, endothelial cells, and cardiac myocytes. So the anti-inflammatory mechanism, at least partly, is explained by this mTORC non-receptor mediated inhibition. The other thing that I think may be particularly interesting to nephrologists is the effect on anemia, which is not simply a volume effect. It turns out that there's also a non-receptor mediated effect of SGLT2 inhibitors on something called SIRT1. SIRT1 is another signal transduction pathway, but in this case, it actually activates SIRT1. SIRT1 is an upstream regulator of HIF2 alpha. So it turns out that in medullary interstitial cells of the kidney, non-epithelial cells, it's been clearly demonstrated that SGLT2 inhibitors can increase erythropoietin production. So I'll just highlight those aspects, which I think are really fascinating, and perhaps clinicians are not yet aware of these mechanisms. But for example, these are clinically relevant. Mitigation of anemia and reduced inflammation not only is good for the kidney, but also for the cardiovascular system. And these are probably important, if you will, side effects of SGLT2 inhibitors that are highly beneficial, in addition to the well-known effects that are mediated through the receptor and blocking glucose reabsorption of the proximal tubule.
Wow. So it's apart from the other effect is it's also an anti-inflammatory and a new anemia treatment drug. That explains why I had a patient with Vakis disease, and we had to stop it because hemoglobin went berserk. And we thought initially that it provoked this due to the diuretic effect. But now you have a much more tangible explanation for what happened. So what about the antihypertensive effects? Is it only a volume question?
Well, I think that that is not clearly understood. I think the diuretic effect is certainly part of it. There's no better treatment for hypertension than diuresis. But you could also imagine, particularly an anti-inflammatory effect at the level of the vasculature could also contribute to blood pressure lowering. So I think it's a work in progress. There's a lot of investigation being done into these non-receptor mediated effects. Not only because they're intellectually interesting, but it may lead to new targets for therapy or even more specific therapies for certain aspects of not only chronic kidney disease, but cardiovascular disease.
And what about the antifibrotic effect? It's not it's a non-tubular effect, I suppose. Is it the anti-inflammatory part that plays a role or some other
Well, I would
effects?
say that that's largely the working hypothesis. There's been a more clear explanation of, again, inhibiting mTORC as a pathway to inflammation and fibrosis. But I suppose it doesn't exclude a direct antifibrotic effect, but there's clearly a very strong signal on reducing cellular inflammation, which is often the upstream initiator of pro-fibrotic processes.
Wow, wonderful. Well, so there are more things to come about this amazing class of drugs, and so I will pass to another new very exciting class. We have started a few decades ago with this spironolactone, and after eplerenone, and now we have finerenone, a new mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. And the obvious question is, how do you think finerenone will be placed in the treatment algorithm of diabetic nephropathy?
Well, in the 2022 Diabetes and CKD guideline from KDIGO, we provided a care pathway. And the recommendation from KDIGO is to add finerenone to patients with diabetes and CKD who have persistent albuminuria despite first-line therapy. So first-line therapy would include an ACE inhibitor or an ARB, not both, especially when combining with finerenone and the risk of hyperkalemia. We propose that it should also include an SGLT2 inhibitor. The reason that finerenone was considered additional risk-based therapy and not first-line therapy really has to do with the abundance of evidence for SGLT2s just being so strong, and really only the FIDELIO program, which included both FIGARO and FIDELIO, which was one had a CKD outcome and one had a kidney disease outcome. Those are really the only outcome studies to date. So they don't rise quite to the level of evidence of SGLT2 inhibition. But that said, there's nothing wrong with giving finerenone with an ACE or an ARB if a person can't take an SGLT2 inhibitor. So that's where they're really positioned. And the reason that the albuminuria, of course, is so important is a couple of things. One, obviously, it's a very strong marker of kidney and cardiovascular risk. But the study entry criteria for FIDELIO and FIGARO and the Fidelity program, that's a lot of Fs, was the requirement for albuminuria. In the cardiovascular study, it was more in the microalbuminuria range. In the kidney outcome study, FIDELIO, it was more in the macro range. But also, too, there's been a post-hoc analysis that showed that 87% of the benefit on the kidney and cardiovascular outcomes in FIDELIO and FIGARO were explained by albuminuria lowering.
Albuminuria lowering that should That could be explained partially from the fact that it's mainly an anti-proliferative agent, or
Well, you know,
from other effects.
yeah, I mean, and back to the blood pressure issue, we know that mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists are potent antihypertensives, but in Fidelio and Figaro, there was only a modest effect of a few millimeters of mercury on systolic blood pressure. So you're right. It's thought to be more of a direct effect on the kidney. It turns out that there are mineralocorticoid receptors. Now we're going back to receptors again, outside of the cortical collecting tubules. So we learned about mineralocorticoid receptors as promoting sodium reabsorption and potassium secretion, the cortical collecting duct. But it turns out that in interstitial cells, particularly inflammatory cells, macrophages, T lymphocytes, dendritic cells, they're mineralocorticoid receptors. But when the mineralocorticoid receptor is activated outside of the epithelium, it's a pro-inflammatory effect. It upregulates a number of inflammatory mediators. So the idea is that finerenone likely works primarily by binding its receptors or blocking the receptors in these interstitial inflammatory cells and reducing inflammation, and not so much of an effect on electrolyte transport or blood pressure.
So we come again to pleiotropic anti-inflammatory effects, and that helps me to ask you the next question about these drugs. Whether do you think or do we have any data concerning non-diabetic nephropathy?
For finerenone.
Yeah.
Currently, the study is in progress. It's called FIND-CKD for non-diabetic forms of albuminuric CKD. So far, we don't have the data yet, but when FIND-CKD completes in the next 1 to 2 years, we will know more. But that said, you know, these are the pathways to inflammation and fibrosis are common to many forms of CKD, irrespective of whatever the inciting factor or disease was. So there's every reason to be optimistic that, like our other agents that inhibit the renin-angiotensin system, ACE/ARBs and SGLT2s, that there's a very good possibility that these drugs should work in non-diabetic forms. But I want to emphasize we need to finish the trial to not only establish efficacy, but of course, safety. The main risk with the mineralocorticoid antagonists of any sort is hyperkalemia, especially when combined with an ACE or an
Yeah.
ARB. But, you know, in the Fidelio and Figaro studies, that was proactively managed, and very few people had to stop the study drug for hyperkalemia. But that needs to be top of mind, is safety as well, and that we particularly pay attention to management of potassium in people who are receiving these agents. You know, one of the great benefits of the SGLT2s, which we recommend as background therapy, is that they actually lower potassium. So they
Yeah.
basically protect against hyperkalemia. So they really have been such a gift. Not only are they highly efficacious inherently, they actually make it safer to add drugs like mineralocorticoid antagonists because they mitigate risk of hyperkalemia.
It, we, you, that, I really love to discuss with you because you always give me a very good pass to the new question, which is, do you think that there will be any cumulative add-on effects when we combine these treatments? Is there going to be a synergic effect from combining all the currently available tools?
So far, all the data we've seen says yes. And again, the reason we believe that to be true is they work by very different mechanisms and they're complementary. So we're basically targeting a number of pathways that contribute to organ failure. And I'd like to emphasize they're really common between the heart and the kidney, which is why kidney failure and heart failure risks go so closely together, but so do the treatments. And you know what we have mainly on combination therapy or post-hoc analyses, but like in Fidelio and Figaro, SGLT2 inhibitors were used, and depending on the phase of the trial, somewhere in the range of 10 to 15% of patients, but the people on SGLT2 inhibitors had just as much benefit as others, suggesting that this was additive therapy. And I will comment that at ASN Kidney Week, we presented a late-breaking clinical trial on the next phase of aldosterone inhibition, which is aldosterone synthase inhibition. It was a phase two study. But in that study, we randomized people to either IMPA or not. So we had the full house of ASI versus placebo or ASI versus IMPA. And we also had escalating doses of the ASI. The long and story short is that aldosterone synthase inhibition is highly effective at reducing albuminuria. And when we looked at a responder analysis, the people who got IMPA and ASI, 70% had an albuminuria response, which was more than a 30% decline on top of standard of care, including an ACE or an ARB. Whereas if they only got ASI or they only got IMPA, the responder rate was about 40%. So all of this is pointing in the direction of combination therapies for both efficacy and safety. There were also fewer hyperkalemia events when people on the ASI had IMPA. So I do think we're moving to combination therapies. The trials studying combination therapies are launching. Easy Kidney will launch this summer. It'll be run out of Oxford like IMPA Kidney, and it will test the aldosterone synthase inhibitor on top of empagliflozin and an ACE or an ARB. So we are really going to be using much more complicated protocols, frankly, and multi-drug therapy. It will look more like an oncology protocol, frankly. And I think as we get to better phenotyping of patients, it may be that not everybody gets every drug, and there will be different combinations we use depending on patient phenotype.
So we'll trick the patients and not the disease, and which is wonderful. And just a short question concerning the poor brother of these treatments. And I would like to ask, we are overwhelmed with the story of GLP-1 analogs and their effects concerning the weight control, but there are some studies that show that there is a real nephrology interest on them. Do you think that this interest will evolve? Do they have any place in the therapeutic protocols of diabetic nephropathy or non-diabetic nephropathy?
Well, you just described pillar four. We have very strong evidence pointing in the direction of kidney protection. So far, it's mainly from the cardiovascular outcome trials and in glycemic lowering trials, but these drugs are highly effective in not only reducing albuminuria, but slowing GFR decline based on slope analyses. And the effect sizes are really substantial. And so I actually think that this is going to be another blockbuster for us. Yeah. And in some ways, maybe bigger because it will address the totality of risk, particularly obesity. In addition to diabetes and kidney disease and heart disease, there are studies going on now in non-diabetic populations. The first one to report was SELECT at the American Heart Association meeting, a paper published in the New England in November. And it was a study of cardiovascular outcome trial in obese people without diabetes, clearly hit its primary endpoint. But if you read the paper carefully, the nephropathy endpoint was a major secondary, and actually the effect size is even larger than the cardiovascular risk reduction. Most people probably know the FLOW trial is a study conducted with semaglutide in people with diabetes and kidney disease, publicly announced in October that it was stopped early for clear positive efficacy. The bar was set very high to stop that trial early, and it's scheduled to report out here in the next couple of months. So we know we have a positive trial. We have the SELECT data, which clearly show a kidney benefit even in non-diabetic CKD. And the first kidney disease outcomes trials will be coming to a major meeting and journal near you soon.
What an amazing period to be a nephrologist. Thank you so much, Catherine. It was a wonderful, wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for sharing with us your expertise. And now I will close this wonderful podcast with two simple questions, small questions, personal. If you were in a desert island Which book, luxury item, and two songs would you take with you?
The book I would take is Tuesdays with Maury. It's a story about an older man who is facing the end of his life, but reflecting on how beautiful it is to be alive and how blessed we are to grow old and to live in the moment that every day is a gift.
It's a right to be old.
Yes, it's a gift to have lived all these years and have had these experiences. And in the context of our discussion today, to see kidney disease care completely transform. We will
Yes.
no longer in the future focus on progression to kidney failure. We will be focusing on prevention, remission, and regression in kidney health. What an exciting time. And so I'm so grateful to be in this moment and watching it happen and being part of it in some way. And then a luxury item, I think I'd take a nice soft blanket to wrap up in and read the book. And
Wonderful.
two songs, both by Bob Dylan. One is Try and Catch the Wind, but sung by Joan Baez and Mary Chapin Carpenter. And the other is Forever Young by Bob Dylan.
I will share with you that you are not the first person who is talking about Bob Dylan. So I think it will be one of our first choices in our playlist. So it's a wonderful, and concerning the blanket, somebody else talked about the pillow.
There you go.
I would like to finish with a simple question concerning something about your town. Just a few words about where do you live?
I live in the area called Eastern Washington, on the east side of the Cascades and on the western slope of the Rocky Mountains. The Continental Divide in North America is about 150 miles east of me. And when you leave my town, you continually climb to the top of the world in this latitude of North America. It's beautiful. It's where with something we call the Palouse Country hits the Rockies. It's filled with trees and rivers, and it's still wild here. This is the last
Wow.
habitat, for example, of the grizzly bear in the lower 48. Otherwise, you have to go up into the Yukon of Canada to find them. So we have grizzly bears and wolves and still have wild, roadless country here. And I really enjoy the privilege of living in such a place and being able to do the work that we do here.
Well, for us, it was a privilege to share with you these moments, and we're really honored, really, really not honored to have shared with you these moments, and we are really grateful for your participation in our podcast. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.